Yo, Joburg, everybody. Welcome to episode 319 of G.I. Joburg. My name is Steve, and I am joined by my best friends. Hello, Paul.
Hey, everybody.
How's it, and Steve? Rob.
How's it, Bergforth?
Oh, it's me. It's a Rob. Oh, wait, I'm still
it's G.I. It's a Robert.
I'm still G.I. Joe Rob from our fantastic...
G.I. Joburg, Rob.
G.I. Joburg, Rob, from our
collaboration. I love that you can tell I didn't get that message. Because you guys were G.I. Joburg, Steve.
No, you did it too. You were like,
I was Paul G.I. Joburg.
Well,
Paul,
if you're scratching your head, guys, up front, we spoke to each other not too long ago at all, just over 24 hours ago, when we jumped onto the Universal Toy Collectors' amazing 24-hour charity drive for Give Kids the World Village. Which has concluded, must have been about 4 hours ago now.
Hell yeah,
something
he's going
like
to sleep
that.
So well. My goodness.
He's getting some money.
Imagine
doing
a 24-hour live stream.
You mean his wife?
But let me cut to the chase. I mean, G.I. Joburg, we jumped on with mate Milo and a fella called Asher, spoke a lot about Palitoid G.I. Joe, or Action Force, I should say, and a lot about mate's photography. But that was just 2 hours of this massive 24-hour undertaking.
Yeah,
I checked in with it time to time, you know, every now and then to see who was on and how Stu was coping. Very well, I might add. But they set a rather modest goal of $1,500 for their goal.
Mm-hmm.
They rose. Do you guys want to guess how much money they were?
I'm gonna say. 2,400.
I want to be optimistic and say like 4,800.
They raised a total of $5,220 in the 24-hour period.
$5,000. Congratulations to you. Wow.
Absolutely amazing. Congrats to you and to it's Georgia, I believe, is his wife. Yes. Congrats on staying up and helping organize. She was very much in the private chats, like, cool guys, this next one's coming in, and you know, very much in the chats themselves. Yeah, it's very
correct
much
correct Stu when the live stream nerves got the better of his logic senses. But we've all been there, trust me. I'm pretty much there every week. So, but I mean, just spinning out from that, besides raising money for an important cause, I really enjoyed being part of it. I don't know about you,
yeah,
guys, but
cool.
I had a blast.
It was a great experience,
a cool session, man.
It was cool meeting mate. Asher was exceptionally knowledgeable about Action Force. And the thing that he's doing was kind of helping organize a Kickstarter or something for extra stories based on Action Force. Sounds really cool. And it's inspired me to go back to Blood for the Baron soon.
It's all there.
Good reading.
It's an amazing resource. It's like if Yojo.com also had all of the comic books on it before Yojo.com. Went the way of the dinosaurs. Guys, we have live chats from Troy Smith, Rob Hawkins, Moonlight 47, Mark Van Leeuwen, Shane Brayler, G7M9W, Project Dark Corp. Yo, Rob, good to see you on YouTube. I sometimes miss you on the Facebook stream. And Vincent396. So
thank you
very much for joining us. We've got 15 folks with eyes on us currently. And we're going to talk about the current comic book series, the ongoing AOR series, 306 by Larry Harmer. Is it 305? Sorry.
305.
I'm ahead of myself. 305, Larry Harmer, Chris Mooneyhan joint. And then Cobra Commander issue number 3. Things are getting very interesting indeed. But before we get into that, any other news you guys want to crack open?
No, I just really like Clutch and the Vamp. The classified ones, it looks like a cool toy, but other than that, no real news.
We're adding that to the growing list of classifieds you're not going to be getting or that you are getting.
Yeah,
I'm only getting these ones, guys, and these ones.
Yeah, we'll watch and it'll pop up on BBTS, and I'll be like, here we go.
So you're still undecided at this point, Paul.
For Clutch and the Vamp, I'm pretty much there. Okay. I would really like to try and get Serpentor and Mindbender before that, if at all possible. But I am decided. I mean, I dig it. I think it's a cool vehicle and it's a cool driver. And you know, the siren song of classified figures. But I do want to mention there's some very cool stuff happening on TV at the moment, and I'm hoping we could talk about one of those things. But I've just recently finished the Peabody Problem, which I really enjoyed. Whoa. The internet has opinions, and that's good.
Yeah, I've seen that, and I'm like, it's so weird. I mean, it's actually a really good show. I binge watched almost all of it in one evening, and I kind of saved the last episode expecting? After the podcast.
I think your line got a bit scrubby when you said the title. What is it called, Paul?
The Three Body Problem.
Oh, I love the unison, boys.
Yeah, look at that. It's a good theory. Hey, we're available.
It's fantastic. It's based off a sci-fi trilogy of books by a Chinese author. And apparently it's been billed as unfilmable because it's very complex and very interconnected. But the way that the show producers I wouldn't say dumbed it down, but they made it more entertaining for viewers. And they kind of, I believe they split the main character into five characters to kind of obviously make it easier for dialogue to go between them and to kind of like explain the things that are going on. It's very entertaining.
That's cool.
Very, very enjoyable. It is weird though, Paul, that like people are very like anti the show. I think
reviews are generally kind of okay.
Yeah.
But it's that typical like internet rubbish of, I mean, the guys, the showrunners are the guys who did Game of Thrones. So now naturally everybody's like, oh, the Game of Thrones,
don't watch that.
Having said that, they did very well when they were adapting. I mean, the earlier seasons of Game of Thrones, I would say, are exceptional.
Oh, definitely.
It's when they improvised that it was a bit like beyond that. They were like, So yeah, when they're adapting something, they're fantastic.
I see G7M9W has said, check out Shogun 2 if you haven't. Dude, I am on Shogun, okay? Like, bad aftershave, man. I love that TV show. I think that is one of the best things to happen to TV since I was invented in 1983. I absolutely love that show.
You invented totally TV? What?
Whoa.
Yeah. No. I was invented in 83, so I can only comment on shows that you know I've lived.
So you were the best thing that happened to TV back then.
Right? Hell yeah. Wow. TV needed a companion, and there I was in front of it.
Keeping it.
And then I got kinky with it by putting games consoles into it. Guys, seriously, Shogun is awesome. I once upon a time found the original DVD set from the old show, the 80s. TV series, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I knew nothing about it, just had a great box and a great price, and I bought the box set and I watched it and I was like, this is amazing. I really loved the show, and I kept thinking like, it'd be cool if they did like a slightly more modern version of this, because it can be a little bit stage like the original show. It's a little bit fairy tale esque. What I mean by that, it's not fantasy, it's just everybody's very nice to each other in a very and the new one's just definitely got a lot more edge. Anyway, awesome. Thoroughly enjoyed that. And guys, that trailer for Aliens Romulus. Yeah.
Yeah, that looked fucking sick.
Yeah. You know, if the movie sucks, at least we got an awesome trailer out of it. Hell so yeah. That's you know, cool.
Good on those guys who made the trailer.
Is this,
and then there's this,
is this part of the Prometheus storyline?
It's actually part of Alien and Aliens. It's between Alien and Aliens.
That's what takes place, So Ridley is producing it, but he hasn't written the story. He hasn't continued his Prometheus sidetrack. It feels more like a real Aliens movie, which is pretty cool.
So it's going to do the Terminator Dark Fate thing and like jump in and kind of eliminate Alien 3.
That timeline.
Alien Requiem. Okay. That's cool.
Maybe.
I mean... Like there's an amazing video game called Alien Isolation, which is also sort of set in that period, and it's Ripley's daughter looking for Ripley, and I absolutely adore that game. Also, thank you, internet critics, IGN, fuck you guys. Sorry, I'm gonna throw out an F bomb, but fuck IGN, they're a bunch of retards. But they like. Yeah, but sorry, but they like gave the game 4 out of 10, and that game's a masterpiece. Nice. And I don't know what they were smoking. So that pretty much hurt the franchise. That hurt that game in its infancy. But I think that was a really, really good direction to take the Alien stories, because it was more like Alien, less like Aliens, but they're both great. It was a cool direction for the mythos. So seeing Romulus is kind of cool to It's kind of cool to see that. It's exciting. Let's see what happens there. The Star Wars Acolyte trailer came out. That's all I want to say about it. There's a trailer about it. The less said about that right now, the better.
I was confused by the logo for that show because it looks like the logo for Opera browser. It's like
it does.
There's the O and it comes in, but it's got like the little accent on the side of the O. And I'm like, it just looks like the Opera logo. It's like, is this just a collaboration between them and Opera to kind of like advertise the browser?
Yes, City
more?
Hunter. Yeah. No, guys, the thing with the Star Wars Acolyte trailer, for me, it just, I can't tell when it's meant to be set, and apparently it's set during the High Republic. Okay, cool. If nobody told me that,
it's 100 years before Phantom Menace, apparently. I don't know. But once again, it's focused on lightsabers. I'm like, I'm
and the dark side, and a person that's gonna start off in the dark side and be tempted to be a naughty person, and then they're gonna find the light, and then they're gonna be a great Jedi because nobody likes to make decisions and choose a path.
I'm not watching it. Also, fuck that. I'm done with lightsabers. I'm done with Force users. I want more stories set in the Star Wars universe. And having said that, I really should check on Andor. I mean,
but you know what did happen?
Should be good, even though Steven Andor said it's cool. Real slow.
It is very slow. But you know what is really cool?
If you need
cool?
to nod off to sleep, my friends.
Ooh, good. I'm going to use that.
There's a TV series that has come out. And every South African knows that if you had Mnet and you woke up at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, you would get to watch this show at 9 o'clock because you'd manage to rub off all the sleep out of your eyes.
Yeah.
And that show is none other but
Mask. Oh shit, I don't own a Wolverine figure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rob. Wow, man.
If I knew you'd plan this, I would have.
X-Men 97, my dude. Oh yes. I had that same one, the lighter, Magneto the lighter.
The Magneto action figure, but
there's a better one.
Sparks
on his chest.
Oh, yeah. No, that was not the better one. that was horrible.
That was so much cooler.
Guys, what are your thoughts on X-Men 97? Have you had a chance to check it out? Steve, I know you have. Rob, I'm not sure.
I did. You messaged you like, I hope Rob checks it out. And then I was like, yeah, I hope he checks it out too. And then I just watched both episodes at work. It's very good. It feels in line with the original series. I haven't read the one graphic novel that it feels like they're adapting. Or at least with their sort of comments, I think it's called Life Death. I haven't read that. Apparently, this at least a storyline in here is apparently an adaptation of that story with the whole Storm losing. Well, spoilers. Storm losing her powers. Whoops, I've ruined it already.
I'm sure everybody's watched it by now. Anybody who cares about it has made a plan to watch it by now.
Yeah,
I've watched each episode twice, actually, to be fair.
Wow. Okay, you've really prepared.
A real strength of this show is that it continues the tradition of being like a shorthand or summarized version of what is 30-plus years of X-Men comics condensed into like, you know, these very manageable chunks. So like, if you've only ever watched X-Men, the animated series is like Phoenix Saga and all that stuff. I mean, these are storylines that played out over years in the comic books. They occupy like a three-parter in the cartoon. So it's like, it gets you up to date in a very elegant, quick way.
Yeah.
I mean if you really
real
want to
X-Men
know what happened, read the stories.
Exactly, yeah, you can deal exactly. if you want to. But like,
and it seems like they're continuing that tradition with the depowered Storm, with whatever's happening with Jean. I'm not gonna tip my hand, but if you know X-Men, you know what happened.
There's two possibilities
during the Dark Phoenix
there. Yeah, there's two possibilities there with her, so we'll see
what happens next.
It also kind of is closing its own loop by not having the offspring of this Jean and Cyclops being Hope Summers. They decided to just kind of double down on the Cable thing and made it Nathan. So it's it's cool, man. I'm back in the game, baby. I feel like I'm 10 years old again. It's
how do we feel about Magneto's new look? I mean, I believe
an old
it
look.
Is based off his... Yeah, it's an old look. I think it's from his New Mutant days when he was the where he did school New Mutants for a while. He was kind of like on the side of good, I believe. That's where it's from.
I'm going to say this much. I don't like it, but I accept its function.
The shoulders,
I mean, if he was dressed in his classic battle gear, he would look a little bit too aggressive to be fulfilling the function that he's currently fulfilling, which is like, I'm going to turn the other cheek and show humanity that I can change and I can now step into Charles Xavier's shoes and take the agenda in a peaceful direction. Yeah.
I just listen, I don't love the look either. But the whole show is put together very well. I especially love those backgrounds. Sorry, I have to comment on them, but they're really cool.
Well, of course.
Animation sometimes bugs me a little bit. The whole animating on twos every now and then is a bit weird. But
for the layperson, please explain.
Just that like sort of stuttery look. You'll see sometimes they
give it some consistency with what came before.
I think what came before it was animated.
Very smooth animation is it jars me a little bit.
Yeah. No, granted. But hey, whatever. It's like, it's a good show. It's got high production value. The soundtrack is fantastic.
Just the seeing voices, the intro sequence having a bit of new polish. You know, they've added in new character introduction cards. But, you know, they've kept the broad strokes of it. And, the theme tune sounds good. It's different, but it's good.
Yeah, it's not like a complete remix. It's just kind of like a little bit zinged up for today.
It literally feels like a continuation of the original show, which I think is cool. And even the technological level of stuff is very, I mean, it's obviously a continuation. It is set in 1997. So it's very much fresh for that time period.
I love that.
All these blasters that just kind of hit you and you get knocked down.
What an inconvenience. But it was cool because Celia watched both episodes with me. She is not familiar with the X-Men at all, or should I say she's not familiar with the X-Men outside of the movies. And even then, you know, it's kind of a passing sort of passing knowledge, like passing. She's got some kind of idea, but nothing really.
She knows who the X-Men.
She knows that they exist. Let's put it that way. and she's been enjoying the show, like, for the most part. She, like, she commented on a few things. She's like, and that was quite cool to hear, like a complete lay person, somebody who's not into that kind of stuff at all. So that was nice. That was a nice bit of feedback. But it did remind me, and I'm sure, I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but it took me back, obviously, to my childhood, like these things always do. But it reminded me of why, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff in my youth and in our youth where we had Transformers, sort of G.I. Joe, mostly. That should have, like, maybe put us on track to being, like, let's say geeks. Whatever's okay. I was into video gaming and all that stuff, but I think if there's one thing that was the sort of proverbial kick into that direction, it was this cartoon and the fact that we had the trading cards for sale at the local news agent here in South Africa. I mean, this show came out,
everyone had the toys, everyone,
everybody had the toys. I remember not even knowing what an X-Men is. Seeing them at Dion's, going, whoa, that guy's cool with the claws coming out of his hands. Wolverine, because, like, damn it, I didn't know anybody who knew that word. Wolverine. And that's how I read it. As Wolverine, my dudes. I bought that figure. I love that toy. It was cool to see in the cartoon that he's an actual badass. The Wolverine powers, you know, the power of Wolverine as a character.
The power of cutting mofos up, man.
Yeah, and that, you know, that whole 90s bad boy kind of gruff kind of character.
I wish
was
I could
very
say
relatable
that the
to
appeal wasn't
fans.
I wish I could say the appeal wasn't universal, but I see it in my own offspring when we were watching X-Men 96, because I couldn't wait for him to go to bed. I was like, I'm gonna throw this on right now. We started watching it together and he kept asking me, Dad, where's Wolverine? I'm like, I must have said that word in front of you approximately one time when we were messing with the action figures, and he was asking, who's this, who's this, who's this? And I said, yeah, this is Wolverine. It's instant. The appeal is instant. He wants that character. He wants to see that character. I'm like, how? How is it? You know, just the power of, like, a killer look and, like, looking very built for purpose. Yeah. Smart kid.
And also,
I just want to say hi to Campbell from Kiwi G.I. Joe Customs.
Oh, hey, Kiwi.
From Deanna.
Andy's joined us
further
too.
Down under. And he says, don't forget to hit the like button. I never say that thing, but since you've said it, I'm going to throw it up on the screen.
Thank you for suggesting. It's a good idea.
If you wouldn't mind, every little click helps this channel. Helps more peepers who might be interested
in front of
in
other people
chats.
Who love this stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So true.
But yeah, man, like this X-Men cartoon just kicked me in the pants and it got me interested about, this character and that character and their backstory and everything. And I think I have a lot to be thankful for when it comes to this X-Men show into my path, into like being in the comic scene. One of my first jobs, as a lot of longtime listeners know, was in a comic store. I was like 11 years old. And it's because of the X-Men, because I was like,
working
oh my God, I want to like be close to the comic.
Child labor.
No, dude. Man, I just helped out. They gave me like $50 a day. It was cool. I could then at that time.
In the 90s. Holy moly.
Dude, I could buy
a fortune.
Three comic books. I could buy three comic books with that and two packets of the cards. That's
cigarettes?
Basically what I did. I wasn't smoking yet. That would have happened not too long after that. But anyway, it was amazing. You know, so I just wanted to put that out there because before the show goes forward, I mean, for all we know, episode 3 is a complete crapper. And I just want to say
so
something about the show and about my experiences while it's still good. And
well,
have it
before we dive into the comics now, I just want to know, Paul, have you seen Ghostbusters Frozen Empire yet? It did
come
out.
Yet.
It did? No. Oh. It came out in the States.
For us. Ah. Yep, 18th of April for South Africa because Stekinical is like, oh, you like Ghostbusters.
Nuts.
That's
okay.
What
I was so excited to hear you know, speak about it.
I was also excited about it. It's getting middling reviews and Rotten Tomatoes and all that stuff I hear, but I don't want to see anything about it. But I'm like, whatever, let me go and watch it. If it's bad,
it's for you to decide, Paul. It's for anyone to decide. If you like something, you don't like something, watch it yourself.
This means the toys are going to come down in price quicker.
Oh, for sure. You know, a family that busts together.
I haven't seen any toys from Frozen Empire yet. But I keep my eyes peeled.
Ooh. Okay.
Ooh. They did the whole
cool. Well, you know who to call, right?
For Afterlife. Yeah, but Paul, maybe the toy sales were not great. I don't know.
They did badly. Ooh. They did very badly in territories outside of America, I believe.
No new toys for Paul.
That might have something to do with it. But before we do the comic books, guys, we have committed ourselves to one new segment. I'm going to trot this out again.
Goodness.
Joe Photography.
Geotography. There is a blast from the past.
That is blast from the past.
This is a jungle setting with Duke and his Tiger Force fatigues trudging through a stream. And in the background, we've got Captain Gridiron. Now, if you are immediately having bells going off in your head as to why these characters would be paired up in a jungle, congratulations.
I agree.
You've played the G.I. Joe NES game by Taxan. Because in the very first level, Duke is in the command position, so he's a pre-selected character. But if you know a thing or two about these characters' strengths in the video game, you want to level up your Captain Gridiron because he's the man. Yeah, so I often use these characters in that opening level and decided to let that be an inspiration for a bit of photography. This was taken in Johannesburg on a trail that I used to run maybe once a week. Well, this particular week, I took two action figures.
Hell yeah.
I remember when you got that Tiger Force Duke.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah,
Captain Gridiron I also received while I was in Johannesburg in the mail.
Yeah, you made me want both of those. But you made me want Duke, not just because...
But I'm pretty sure I made him want to have these figures. Oh, he's back.
Where did I go? Where did he go? Where did I go?
Momentarily.
He disappeared.
Duke transformed from being a space to fill in my collection as a Tiger Force nut to a figure I had to have because you got him and because of this photo shoot and because of everything behind it. And I was like, damn it! Because I remember you and I were chatting a lot about that. Like, isn't that Tiger Force Duke? Anyway.
It is.
Cool shot, man. I love
G7M9W asks, is there someone in the background? Not in the deep, deep background. That just might be a trick of foliage, making it look like there's someone back there. I'd like to think maybe Snake Eyes is covering them from the shadows, but I didn't actually have the action figure to hand that day. It's Captain Gridiron, kind of in the mid-ground.
Yeah.
That big gun.
Now, this represents the first level of the NES game. I then embarked on making a series of photography inspired by the various levels. The second level is a kind of a frozen wasteland level, a Cobra base, maybe in the Arctic. Is it the Arctic, Paul? Is it Antarctica?
I think so, yes. Yeah.
Either way.
Where the heck did this run take you? Where you could, like, playing a little river, and then suddenly there's snow down the road.
Wasn't this in the UK, Steve?
This was not in the UK. This was actually in Seoul. In the Republic of South Korea.
Oh, there we go.
Or Republic of Korea. Let me not get my nomenclature wrong. Yes, so Blizzard is your playable character in that level, your pre-selected character. And you, at the very end of the sort of the first stage, you come up against Frag Vipers. So I thought that was a cool pairing of Blizzard versus a Frag Viper. Looks like they're about to get into hand-to-hand combat, actually, because Blizzard doesn't have a weapon, and the Frag Viper's got his claw, but they're way too close to actually use grenades, so, like, it's down to...
I had this as a computer wallpaper.
You did? Wow, okay. Yes. I'm sure we can make this available as a wallpaper to any and all patrons and YouTube channel members. Paul can help me with that. And then third and final for today's photography discussion session...
Oh, this old classic.
Paul is intimately familiar with all the chip tunes from that game.
I've been listening to it as of today.
Very cool. Well, level 3, your pre-selected character or sort of person in charge of that level is Snake Eyes. How he gives orders without being able to speak is anybody's guess. But yes, it is set in the New York sewers. So this is kind of more urban setting. This backstage on a production of Sunset Boulevard, which I had way too much time on my hands during. So
that's such a good show.
You like
Carry
it?
On.
It's great.
I love Sunset Boulevard, dude. It was awesome.
I think it Carry might on. Currently be in rehearsals in Australia with Sarah Brightman playing the lead.
Oh, wow. Yeah. They got it back for that? Well, not back for that. I think it was Phantom of the Opera.
Well, I mean, Sunset Boulevard's about a starlet in her sunset years trying to make a comeback. Not that Sarah Brightman needs to make a comeback. I think she's never left. But it's she's old enough to play it. And all her notoriety from Phantom kind of feeds into the legend of... I'm forgetting the character name. Crucify Sophia. Me in the comments, or you musical fundies. Norma Desmond. There it is. I stopped you too soon. You're about to be taken to your keyboards. Anyways, this is just Snake Eyes backed up against the wall with a cool blue gel light. Like, it was a nice strong light, but it had a blue gel on it, which just really makes that figure's sort of two-tone color scheme pop. The blacks look good. The silvers look good. Nice. And that is your Snake Eyes, Rob.
Hell yeah.
I.e. our Snake Eyes, like the classic Snake Eyes from our childhood.
It's all Snake Eyes, Rob.
Guys, if you were to pick a favorite from these three, which would it be? And this is open to the chats as well, if you guys want to settle on
the Snake Eyes one is too iconic. Like, okay. It's
super iconic.
It's burned into my brain. I see it everywhere now.
I see it even now.
It is our avatar on YouTube.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man, this is like this is like asking me to choose between my favorite children, because I've actually had these all as computer wallpapers at different stages on my Mac around the same time that these were done. The Snake Eyes is amazing and I really, really love it. But today I feel like the Blizzard's my favorite today.
Hey, cool.
I love the dynamic and I love the scale. Like, it actually feels like they're really like, they are really there. But it feels like they're the right size. They're human size. It feels like that for me.
Yeah. It just helps when you put the camera shoulder to shoulder with the figure. Lens to shoulder. Mm. Cool. Hey, chats. Nice. G7M9 says, wow, tough call. Duke or Snake Eyes? Mark says Snake Eyes. The Snake Eyes photo is so nice. Yep, no, we're seeing a lot of love for that snake. Thanks, guys. Always nice to get
I'm
some
gonna throw something
for my
out now.
Rather amateur photographic efforts.
What Paul, are you throwing away, Paul?
I want to throw out an idea. It's actually something I've had cooking for a while. But like Steve doing the photo thing makes me feel like now we've got a good section for it. I'd love to like
now
show
we can
off
join
one
in.
Or two of the Bold Force's like photographic efforts. And now obviously we're not going to have one for every episode because guys might not shoot too many pics. But I'd love to like show off a community photo and be like, oh, I really love this photo. Not critique, not like break it down or anything. Just be like hey, cool I really loved. Yeah, I really love this shot. It made me laugh. Or, I really love this shot because it like is super impressive. And
I love the shot. It's hilariously bad.
you're Whatever. Referring to the Berg Force. I heard Bold Force.
Did I say Bold Force? I'm so.
I was
sorry,
about to say like, are Berg we going to see pictures of giant robots on this channel?
Yes,
that'd be so cool.
I actually
Why
meant
not?
Berg Force. Sorry, guys. Slip of the tongue.
Let's just get some cross.
Okay, so how do people send us their photos?
You can send it to our email, which is arealsouthafricanhero@gmail.com.
Nice. Yeah,
that sounds right to me. Why not?
Yeah.
We can even take pictures, Paul. Why not?
Guys, if you can try and get them in by Friday, that would be,
Friday?
By Wednesday, that'll be good because it'll give us a chance to actually look at them and go through them.
Just keep sending them in forever, you know, and then
we'll just keep posting them. It's not necessarily like we're going to choose like the best, but obviously I'm so scared of saying don't send us a picture of XYZ because then we're going to get a ton of pictures of like
send whatever inspires like, you to kind what do you of, you think know, of take me a now? Picture of your toys. Well, I'd like to think it'll be toy and G.I. Joe focused, in some way.
I mean, we've
happy
had
Sunday
guys
to Matt Noon.
Cool to show off that kind of thing. Anyway, is it a cool idea? Let me know. If you want to involve yourself, you know what to do.
I don't know.
A new segment. Okay. Ooh. Well, then it needs to be in perpetuity, Paul. You can't say like the cutoff is Wednesday because people could be listening to this sometime in the future.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
People can just send forever.
If you send us something to our email address, please know that it might be popped up on screen in a future episode. So
yeah,
stay
tuned. Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah,
we'd
send
love
us love
to
notes
consider
well,
it.
Cool.
Berg Gallery.
You guys keen to read the ARAR book first or consider the ARAR book first?
Can we get through the ARAR book first?
Oh, here we go.
Well, up front, Paul is very honest.
Eat your vegetables. So this is continuing the, I'm going to call it the mutant saga. Of the Larry Harmer.
Burglary. in the subject, before we go on, in the subject of those emails, when you're sending us, make sure it says burglary. Burglary, yeah.
I like it.
Burglary.
We've got a cover by Andy Kubert. Very nice.
It's the best
Thank
thing
you,
about
Andy.
This comic.
Oh, actually, okay. It's one of the best
Pouring
things.
Scorn.
There's another best thing in this comic book.
Well,
it's Cobra Commander marching through Springfield with his Techno Vipers and Tele Vipers and regular Vipers.
Come with me,
leading
children.
Leading the charge.
The townspeople have been paid.
I love how the Techno Vipers are leveling their kind of cameras very much like a weapon. Like,
I'm going to
film
you.
I'm going to film you to death.
I'm going to capture your image and keep it for myself.
So, guys, let's cut to the chase. Why is this getting groans from you?
It's well, from me, it's so it's boring. It's slow. It
boring.
feels like this entire story is moving at a snail's pace.
Like going
something very slow. Something happens in the previous issue, and then they discuss it in the next issue. And then something will happen in this issue, and then they'll talk about it in the next issue. But they're also still all talking about something, the entire situation itself.
Mm.
You know, and it's information that us as the readers already possess. You know,
if you're paying attention
to these conversations, It's not just, you know, not just because we're picking it up, but we've been privy to the other side of these conversations. It's like we're just watching each group essentially gain the knowledge that the other group already has as the pages unfold.
With a few additional wrinkles.
They use fiber optic.
Yeah, a small little bits, but it's not enough to be like, wow, I really needed to know that.
Look, we get some rug out from under you moments in this issue. We find out that Serpental Khan is manipulating everything, that actually he's in control. Because not only does he have a sort of a mutant Zartan facsimile infiltrating Destro's castle while he's busy dispatching the real Zartan in the swamps. But we find out that he's managed to infiltrate Revanche's own HQ in Baton Rouge, which I find very ambitious, because when did he do that? From the time he was created to the time he became a zombie to the time like he made contact with the Blue Ninjas to begin with. Like, when is he going to become so ensconced in their Baton Rouge HQ that he's got a specially shielded room where he can do whatever and not be scanned and not be... like?
Well, I'd like to think it's...
infiltrated deep, man. Mutants.
It's as they're doing it. I mean, they've kind of like taken the production of their special mutants off-site. And it's probably just part of this process of him getting set up there. I don't think it's been that long.
No, that site belongs to Revanche. That is a
We have his troops are there, and they're helping with the process of converting, these mutants into, cyborgs cyborgs. Yeah.
Is it gonna hurt? Yeah, it's gonna be like root canal all over your body.
Points for making the
like
the kidney stone. That's cute. Seems like
only line something I cared that. About.
Well, you've not had any of those procedures, I presume, then, Paul. It's quite possible that Larry's had all of them.
No,
some body horror stuff. Look, I do appreciate that they've really committed to the mutancy. Like all of the casino guests. They're still walking around with like leis around their necks, but they are so deformed. Yet their minds are still intact. Like I would be freaking out. Like I wouldn't be content with what has happened to me. But these guys all just seem totally resigned to their fate, calm like a Hindu cow.
Yeah, they're all hungry apparently as well.
When are we going to see them eat?
When are we going to see them eat something? I thought there was one like little moment in this book that I thought was pretty cool was I imagine it's a Python patrol officer that is the guy that's infiltrated. Like that was cool, kind of alluding to the fact that the Python patrol.
Well, finish that thought. He's the guy who Serpental Khan has infiltrating this Revanche facility.
Mm. Well, but infiltrated. He's in charge of the conversion of the mutated inhabitants, the zombies. Like he hasn't infiltrated. He's literally he's there on purpose, but he's there with the purpose of converting, but at the same time helping install these gadgets. Yeah, so it's a double thing. He's not there because he's not allowed. He is allowed to be there,
It's getting convoluted, but let me just try and get it straight in my head. So this guy's there to ensure that a specific chip is or is not installed in all these mutants. Yes. In order for Serpental Khan to deny Revanche control of them.
Yes, so that they cannot turn on Serpental Khan. Right. So he's in charge of that. That's his hidden purpose. But he's, the official purpose is to oversee the conversion of these guys, whether or not there's an extra chip in there or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, complex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, Chris Moynihan... Chris Moynihan is an absolute rock star. And why do I say absolutely. That? Because this book is so full of talking and very little action. And as a pencil, like if you're a penciler and you have to do pages of people standing and talking, it's not exciting. You don't go, oh my word, I'm so excited to draw page 12 because of the like heated debate they're going to have.
Like, yeah, because then it's just the job, you know. You're just getting through the pages. Look at this man.
He is a consummate professional. He has made every one of these panels fascinating and interesting. And this book is all about the art for me. Don't get me wrong. I think Larry's got an idea. I would like him to get to that idea, please, because I'd like to see what's going on now. It's costing a lot of money to get to this idea. That's the other thing. This is, it's costing skin. I just want to get there. And also, it's a lot of great art wasted on a lot of people having...
conversations, sitting around.
They're all having talking. Chats, like, whoopee.
I mean, the Joes have not left. The Joes have not left their control center in probably the last... since the series rebooted at Skybound. They've been standing in that little control center for 4 or 5 issues. And finally, in this issue, they actually do something about the...
Infiltrating teams.
Yeah, it's a Viper team.
Yeah, take them out. Now, this just hammered home the fact that, like, these enhanced mutant revanche Vipers were taken out by the Arashikage agent, Dawn Moreno. Mm-hmm. But for all their enhancements and all that sort of, like, you know, pushing of how incredibly difficult these things are to kill, we see them very handily dispatched by regular Joes. Malta, Spirit, and Lady J. Okay, maybe not regular Joes. Maybe these guys are better than the average. But still, 3 Joes versus 3 of these enhanced mutants. And the Joes still come out on top. Now, this would be more exciting if I haven't seen it happen countless times to this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's always an introduction of a new big bad. And they always seem to be
You get just told as easy dispatched they're really difficult to kill. It would be cool to see them actually get a few wins of their own before they actually go up against the Joes. Because it also shows you, well, not kill some Joes necessarily, but actually kill soldiers or something where they have a challenge that they overcome for themselves. Because then that also shows that they are more powerful. But it also shows you how elite the GI Joes are as well, that they overcome this new threat to them.
It doesn't feel
threatening or challenging at all, as you've said, to overcome anything that these guys have been pitted up against.
Well, they increase the stakes, other to death. I mean, the amount of exchange that these guys have during their fight,
masturbating
Spirit v this Viper, I mean, they're just kind of it's a very showed or say don't show sequence.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a grenade. Putting the pin back in the grenade and holding the grenade so the spoon doesn't fly out. And
But my reinforced steel fiber tendons will make it difficult for you to put it back in. Oh, but or will it?
Boy, oh boy, was I relieved when Lady J just put a gun to his head and blasted this Viper to pieces. Look, that is the style, and it will always be the style. And I guess. When we were kids and we were reading this stuff for the first time, it was less egregious. So I'm trying to remind myself that, like, as a child, Child Steve would be soaking up all of this detail, all of these lengths that Larry's gone to explain things, over-explain things, because all of that stuff would be useful information to me. This would be an education to me about how a grenade works, about if you hold down on the spoon, it's not going to fly off and it's not going to start cooking the grenade. It's not going to get
in. There's always something to learn and something to incorporate into your knowledge of G.I. Joe and to, I suppose, your playtime as well.
But boy, does it get a little chortle out of me as an adult. I'm like, this is hilarious. This is happening in the blink of an eye. And these characters are like soliloquizing to one another about grenades. And
it's like an anime.
If you do this, you can't do that. Not if I do this to you.
But then I can't do
that. Like Yu-Gi-Oh! Hopefully, he uses the Blue Eyes White Dragon. Then I will counter him with Shining Warrior Fival. You know,
it's parody at this point.
For my trap card.
It's absolutely parody at this
point. It's 5 books of this shit. I'm sorry. I'm going to call it. But it's 5 books of this. What the hell? We are not going forward with the story. Nothing's happening. It is boring.
It's taking forever to get to the point. Yeah, it really is.
When we were kids, we would have I'm sorry, but as a kid, I would have gone into like the second book and been like, boring, done. Well, I'll wait until like my friends tell me that the shooting starts, you know, like, I'm sorry, not to sound like basic and whatever, but like, it's the same crap that we were dealing with near the end of the run that we've been hating reading in the last few episodes where we went back.
And
with
your notes, we have not gone back to read in quite some time.
Gone back to out of excitement, you know. It's just the same stuff. It's like, I don't care. Just move characters from point A to B. Have it be fun. All these, like the last three episodes, you know, issues of this 5, 4, and 3, okay, respectively 303, 304, 305, right? They have taken place in about as much time as it takes for somebody to go for a toilet break. You know this because Duke and Spirit have not moved from their position. Okay, Spirit has moved
Duke
a little
has,
bit. Thank you.
Duke has removed the grenade that was on his back. I noticed at one point he was wearing two grenades on his front. And I'm like,
yeah.
Ah, okay. Maybe Chris got the note like, yeah, it'd be really uncomfortable sitting on a chair with a grenade in the small
room. Well, instead of the toilet thing, hooking the pin. Like, pulling the pin out, you know? Like, when he went to the loo, it's like, oh boy, don't want to have this happen again.
But yeah, it really is a chore to get through these.
Yeah.
The art is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it can't be denied. It's beautiful to look at. I mean, I'm happy to page through these comics, but I'm unhappy to read them currently. Like, yeah. I really need the pace to pick up at this point.
Like, something happened.
I don't need, like, tons of stuff to happen at once, but you...
No, one thing. Just one thing. Know?
Well, one the thing Morenos are going to have to be refugees now on the run from Cobra because they didn't turn in their daughter. Instead, they ambush a lone Crimson Guardsman who was there to kind of capture Dawn Moreno.
Yeah, their neighbor.
They hit him so hard, like, he turned into Prince Charles.
But yeah, look, that's that was an interesting little plot beat for me anyways. Firstly, seeing that she has parents. This was established sort of 2 issues back. But then that they weren't so, you know, true believer that they were going to turn in their own daughter. They actually did the noble thing in the end and are now going to pay the price for having to leave their home, leave their stuff. Though if you know the law, you know that everyone from Cobra only recently returned to Springfield anyway. So I guess they're not too attached to this place. But I see photographs on the wall. I'm like, yeah, no, this is quite a big sacrifice that they're taking.
And there's boxes of Dawn stuff, you know. And also this.
Baby, like, clothes, stuff like that. Jeez.
This moment in the comic book where they've now got one of these revanche dudes like spread out on a table and they're doing like an autopsy and then the hand shakes off. Thank you. Exactly where I was going with that. Wow, how could you tell? Because it was so predictable. Like, I'm like, has G.I. Joe not learned to do some kind of quarantine procedure first? Were they not in the last issue attacked by this thing in the very helicopter that flew them back to the
pit? I think it's form following function, because this is clearly just an homage to issue 3. Like, it knows what it is. Chris Mounahan knows what it is. And it's perhaps fan service?
It could be a bit of fan service. It's also a little bit Evil Dead. Fine. Like, it's fun and whatever. It's just... Like, and I
get
it.
A cool shot of Stalker shooting it. I mean, that's a really cool moment.
That is a cool shot. And his line is pretty badass. Like,
and it's signed by Chris Mounahan. It's like, yeah, this page is worth a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, this was a cool shot and a cool moment in the book. And also, I know a lot of people that are reading this are not necessarily like longtime readers. So this kind of thing is fun. But then again, in the last issue, this happened. So this is happening again. So basically, we're just proving that G.I. Joe is very, very sort of gung-ho. They don't really like follow any procedure. They're not careful and they don't learn from their mistakes. It's kind of what the characters feel like right now. But then they also kind of do, because they managed to do the old Native American rug trick. I don't understand. I do want to point out, though, there's another homage. The Zartan shot when Zartan's on the swamp skier.
Oh yeah,
the cliffhanger.
That is very Action Force. The reason I say that, and I'd love to actually, I can't find the actual issue of it from Action Force, but I feel like this is kind of a bit of an homage to that. the reason I have that in my head is because I really love that still, because Steven showed that to me long ago, and I was like, oh my god, this version of Zartan looks amazing.
Yeah, my first blushings with the character of Zartan came in the Battle Action Force floppies, the newspaper print, two-color, three-color, from UK. And Zartan is presented as this kind of very quiet, very scheming, methodical, like almost creature of the swamp. And I'd be surprised if that was part of Chris Mounahan's reference file on Zartan. But
it feels what like
he's
it
doing
is.
With Zartan, well, I feel like it's in line with what he's doing with a lot of characters by making them more sinister and mysterious. Because Zartan got very clownish at times. I'm thinking back to like him being portrayed as like the godfather, basically, during the Devil's Due years. I mean, he had failing health, but he was just this kind of like, you know, he sat in a chair and he looked, and he wore a black, like, knitted vest or something. that ain't Zartan. And jewels, like skulls and rings and stuff. I'm like, nah. This is Zartan. This is how he should look. He should be a swamp creature, a denizen of that environment.
But at least now there's another...
At least now there's another, what was that, Rob?
I was going to say, at least there is another subplot going on. So, you know, something else could happen in the next issue. You know, now we can follow Zartan doing something.
Don't hold your
follow
breath.
Dawn doing something. We can follow, Serpenta Khan doing something. Cobra Commander doing something. Someone else doing something. It's actually wild that there's so many characters that we can, that we are looking at storylines, but nothing is happening. I mean, there is stuff happening, but there's not enough stuff to kind of like this trade paperback. I mean, I feel like you could almost skip this. When this comes out as a trade, you can read the back and just go straight to 307.
Like, if it wasn't for Mooneyham's art, I wouldn't spend money on it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right. Need we rate it then, guys?
Yeah, I think we should.
A cruel exercise.
For the record. Rob?
I'll probably give it a 2, I think. And that's basically just because of the art. Unfortunately, it's so slow at this point. It's too slow. I need things to start happening. We live in an age where things, happen all the time. Someone agrees.
I literally spoke through Rob. Everything he says is exactly what I was going to say. Steve?
There we go.
Let me not fuck the trend. I was going to go 2.5 because I had a good laugh when... Paul's using his mind trick on me. I can't resist. It's going to be a 2. I don't know, guys. It's what you've come to expect from this run.
Which is sad.
Treading water. There were some big reveals, but I felt like they came so far out of left field that I was like, yeah, I've seen this trope before. It's like the scheming mastermind, like everything that happens is according to my plan. I foresaw this all. None of this is taking me by surprise. It's all part of the plan. And it doesn't feel earned in some respects. I feel like, how did the logistics of that work? So Pentel Khan was born yesterday, and now all these deep-seated plans are coming to fruition. Okay.
Well, I'm glad Dave enjoyed it. Thank goodness.
Daredevil Dave. Range.
All in the time that it took to drop a deuce. So, yeah.
All right, let's talk about it.
I'm glad people are enjoying it. So, just not us.
Let's talk about Cobra Commander number 3.
Whoa. Shall we?
Yes. Let's.
Lovely image of Zarana with a... The cover has Zarana with a very captive Cobra Commander in the torture house, which we learn is...
Ooh.
They call that my brother's laboratory, old lab. I'm like, jeez, what, that meat factory?
That was only because of my favorite scale, says Dave. That's the only reason he gave it that score.
So we catch up with our protector Nemesis. Of Cobra Commander.
The protector,
It's coming, whatever you want to call him, the guardian. Calls him Grunt at one point, but that was actually erroneous, as the letters page will tell us. He's trudging around looking for Cobra Commander. Cobra Commander is being devoured by a mutated croc, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, something about the guardian. A snake just attacks him. Because that's what snakes do. And he tears the snake apart, which tells me, like, clearly denizens of Cobra Law don't feel a kinship to our, you know, run-of-the-mill reptiles. Yeah. It's not like he was snakes like, hello, brother. he rips the snake apart. I just
thought that was an interesting choice. Well, he rips it apart. It attacked him, and he's very annoyed right now.
Mm. Okay.
And also, it's just representation of Cobra Commander as well. You know, the snake that he's trying to capture, and it's annoying him.
Mm,
it's very metaphorical.
Speaking of capture, none other than Xandar captures CC, brings him back to the surface off with a harpoon. I like that. That is leaning into the action figure accessory.
Thank you.
I mean, as of recording, and as of obviously the publication of this comic book, we have a name-only reveal for Xandar's classified representation, but no images yet. So they went with the original 1986 design and accessory, and I'm loving that.
Yeah, totally cool. this moment when they come into the bar.
The Dreadnought bar.
Do we call this Dreadnought bar the Dan bar?
I don't get it.
Never mind. If you don't, I'm sure there's people that do get it. But
there are a few moments in this book that channel what I anticipate is more of like a Joker trait. Like just the absurdity that in order to get the Dreadnought's attention, Ripper pulls out a gun and shoots one of them in the gut. Like, just offhand, not even looking at him. And this guy is left to bleed out for the rest of the scene. I'm just thinking, like, that's something an absolute maniac like the Joker would do, right?
Mm.
I don't know if I'd want to be a member of this biker gang.
That's exactly what it's telling to you, you know?
Just the arbitrariness of life and death.
Yeah, and how Ripper has absolutely no regard for it. So, it's very cool.
Scary.
That works for me. It's a cool shot. Like, cool angles and colors. Good vibes. And then something which I think everybody's going to laugh at me about. I love that they describe the texture of Energon.
Mm.
You know, it's a glowing goo, you know, type vibe. I always took Energon to be like this hard shelled kind of crystalline type thing. Mm. But I like that we've established it's kind of goo like. It's
kind of heavier than water because jello. We see it at the bottom of this deep, deep, deep pool that Cobra Commander is being dragged towards. Yeah, excellent. And it is interesting. And they keep it in cubes. What are the cubes manufactured by them? Well, that's just a visual cube.
Yeah, I don't know. Does it you know come out as a sort of cube shape? Does it like to inhabit the cube shape? There's this goo,
it's an easier way to kind of represent it so the people do understand that this is Energon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like that because I mean if you're somebody who's never read anything about Transformers or any of this stuff before. And you see Energon, and now you know what Energon may feel like. You don't know what it smells like, but you know what it feels like and what it looks like. So that's cool. I just thought it was a nice touch, and it was done nicely. It was like kind of subtle. So yeah,
Cobra Commander gets also brought in by Xandar, and his torture begins.
Yeah, we find out that is a good long time on this. It's nice
torture porn. You like that?
Yeah,
we. It's we great. Do learn all, that he's got the Batman Dark Knight electrified sort of helmet doohickey. Mm-hmm. Buzzer tries to take off the helmet and gets shocked. I'd say that's a one-up on the helmet just being lined with explosives. Because did you think that through, Cobra Commander, classic Cobra Commander, that removal of your helmet would make it blow up? Because I don't know if I want to be wearing that helmet then. Yeah, exactly.
I will take you out. Welcome, Ridley, and I hope you feel better, Emmanuel. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we can make you feel a little bit better by talking about torture.
Literally torch, because torch takes to trying to cut the helmet open with his torch. And I mean, points for depicting torch with an actual acetylene torch. Oftentimes, he's just kind of relegated to being the flamethrower of the team. But this is his included accessory. And also, I mean, I think this might have been illustrated before we had a digital render of his classified version, because it looks very much more like the classic toy presentation. No tattoos.
I love the hair, bro.
And the torch is very much the classic accessory torch. We don't see the sort of the skull with the flames coming out of the nostrils and whatnot, or eye holes.
Yeah, some kind
Rob
of
Hawkins
madness.
Brings up an interesting point about Energon, how it's depicted in the Transformers cartoon. There was a point where Sandu kind of created empty cubes and then they filled it with Energon. But I think...
Where's Zorana getting the cube then from? I don't know.
That's but it's not that obvious that it's kind of like a wave liquid superior. You know, it kind of just feels like a glowing energy. And I think this is the first time that I can think of where it kind of is described as like a liquid sort of, you know, that they kind of...
Yeah, see, my memory on the cartoon is a little bit fuzzy with that as well. I do remember Soundwave doing that.
Yeah, but it always
pushes out of his chest.
Like an energy, you know, it's just an energy, like a light that fills up the cube. Like you need to put it in the cube because it needs to somewhere to stay.
And Cybertronians absolutely drank it. Like it was a liquid that they could consume and actually get drunk off of.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
And doesn't the Soundwave masterpiece come with an empty container or an energon?
Yeah, he comes with a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He does. Cool little pink plastic cubes.
Nice.
We get some very cool POV shots from Commander's point of view.
I love this too. That's why I kept my mouth shut. I wanted to see what you guys were going to say. I thought this was so cool. I actually managed to cut a little bit into the mask. Like, I was like, oh, cool. That means the next page we're going to see something.
Well, it confused me because they said they couldn't get into the mask using the torch. But then we see this gap in Cobra Commander's point of view where we're seeing the sort of opacity of the mask on either side and then like a clear full color version in the middle, which says to me that they did cut through the mask.
They've cut through some of it, but I don't think all of it, because I mean you do continue to not see, you know, kind of like his face, so it could be like an outer layer that they kind of go through.
Guys, welcome to Cujo. The torture sequence does like break my sense of this reality slightly, more than slightly.
Uh-oh. Why like, would you do that?
Because a cutting torch is used to cut through steel, and they turn it on his wrist. Like, that would blast through your flesh onto the other side immediately. Like, you would lose your hand. Like, how is this happening?
Well,
they turn the torch on his wrist. I'm like, this is a little too much for my sense of reality to follow.
Could be on a really low setting or a misunderstanding of how torches work.
Also, a good reminder that we shouldn't learn how to use acetylene torches from our comic book reading experiences.
True. But thankfully, it is only one panel. And you can kind of like skip that panel, Steve, and get back on board with how awesome this issue is.
They take the jaws of life to his helmet as well. I mean, it's...
Like, yeah, but it's some kind of...
Take cars apart.
Yeah, but then that's how powerful his helmet is, right? Like, it's structurally resistant to that
but
amount
then, but
of
that
trauma.
Also suggests not just that his helmet is powerful, but like the muscles in his neck and his entire body is powerful. Because you're applying that pressure to there, and they're probably twisting and doing motions like that to it. I mean, you know, he's a freaking strong dude.
Are they conducting an interrogation, or are they trying to murder him in the most painful manner? Because
they're trying to get into the helmet. I mean, I don't think they're trying to kill him. Like they are torturing him. I think they know what they're doing. You know, they are applying all of this stuff to him, but they know. They've done it so often that they know they're experts in torture.
That is true, G7. Sorry, G7's most recent comment. However, we can learn how to use grenades. Yes,
Absolutely.
Very important safety tips about the spoon and the pin.
Mm-hmm. Different writer, yeah. A more knowledgeable writer of you know, military stuff.
Eventually, they leave him alone after Ripper paints, using Cobra Commander's own blood, a sort of a smiley face on the helmet. This is another moment of, like, definitely channeling that Joker energy. But Cobra Commander starts playing mind games on the Dreadnoks to the point where they actually are all... Weapon. Yeah, he's learnt enough just by their sort of snatches of conversation to see what winds up each of them. For Xandar, it's like knowing that his sister has more intimate knowledge of what the plan is from Zartan. Like, Zartan is kind of referenced in a few times, not in name, but you just know that they're talking about their sibling, their older brother. And it feels like Xandar's on the outs, so he's pissed off about that. Buzzer has been called a poser, and the information has been slipped that he actually is classic Buzzer, and that he's sort of a professor, an Oxford professor, or some prestigious institution's professor who is just studying Dreadnought culture and then got beguiled by it. So he's not a real, you know, Dreadnought.
Doesn't come
so
from
he's
the
got a chip on his shoulder about that.
Well, he's like Thrasher in that respect. Thrasher also comes from privilege.
Right.
So, yeah.
So they all wind up scuffling. Though I did have a note about this. Like, if Buzzer is the classic Buzzer and he speaks with probably a British accent, they call him the governor, then how come there was that comment from those two victims of the Dreadnoks, you know, an issue or two back, where they called the Dreadnoks rednecks?
Well, accents can be misunderstood. I mean, we went to the States and people thought we were from California, so...
and Philadelphia, born and raised.
Interesting. I think if you haven't heard an accent before, you will still assume, and the way that they're dressed as well. So, Occam's Razor mentions, I mean, are the Dreadnoks experts in torture? Or are we kind of just kind of implying that they are, or assuming they are?
I wouldn't say they're experts in torture. I would say they definitely have that as a skill set, or should I say they're not scared to use torture? And that they've
I said that I feel like they're experts in it, but I think it's more of like a experience thing, you know, where they just get, they've done this so often at this point that they...
I don't think they're experts in interrogation at all. They are just maniacs.
Yeah, they're like dismembered people.
Clearly their modus operandi when they catch people in their turf is to dismember them with their various implements. Like, this presents a challenge. They're like, so we're not allowed to kill this guy, but we're still going to use our toys on him.
Yeah. Like,
on a lesser opponent, he'd be slaughtered within seconds. I guess Cobra Commander, he's got that plot armor. It is his book after all. Torch breaks up the fight with a flamethrower this time in close quarters. I don't know how smart that was, but it's pretty much in keeping with the chaos of the rest of this book. And Cobra Commander, once he's got their attention, it seems, then activates a homing beacon on his palm or pulse point. And that freaks Serana right out. She's like, what did you just do? What do you think I just did? So she's like, oh shit. Well, if he's got backup coming here, we got to skedaddle. Because
he also did it. He also did it strategically. He did it when they were all watching him. He didn't have to wait. He wanted her to see him do it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, he actually chose his moment. Like, he let them mess with him. He messed with them. And then he was like, "This enough of this." You know.
It's giving us a lot of information on Cobra Commander. This presentation of him is hardcore. He could have summoned his backup anytime. Instead, he waited. He endured the pain. It strains believability, but it does give you a very bold idea of how incredibly tough this presentation of Cobra Commander is. So credits to that.
He's the coolest thing Only trucks could kill characters and books titled after them.
maybe trucks, unless that truck is Optimus. But anyway.
But the coolest thing about this is this is all coming out through the story, you know, and the events that are occurring in front of you. We are able to infer this from the actions that are taking place, you know, like the responses an email and with stuff. Art. Yeah, there's no art, you know. It's just not like they're telling us what each person is doing. It's literally. We are able to figure this out just because of the events unfolding in front of us, which I think is really cool.
No cut to a command center where characters are just endlessly soliloquizing.
It seems they are really good at torture, and Cobra Commander is able to withstand many hours of torture. But look, he could have ended it any time he wanted. Why is this happening?
The big reveal of the issue, the Dreadnoughts lay into the Protector, who's come for Cobra Commander, and he decides to drop his disguise. Turns out it was just a fleshy covering, because actually, rip, spoiler warning, it's Nemesis Enforcer.
Yeah.
Cobra Commander looks on with his painted
smiley
smile.
Face, and I love it!
It's amazing. And we don't see what Nemesis Enforcer does. We don't see the wrath that he wrought. Upon the Dreadnoughts, we just have sound effects and a kind of
rest in peace Dreadnoughts, I guess. They push in on Cobra Commander. On the universe.
This was something that was going through my head as well. It's like we've seen Dreadnought cannon fodder, and we've seen named Dreadnought characters in this book, and we know our favorites are all going to survive, and we know that those other guys are all just going to be painting the walls with their entrails by the end of this sequence.
Probably. I mean, they did establish a lot of them. And I think that the named guys are probably smart enough to kind of like keep their distance once they realize like what is going on here. But it's a really fantastic ending. All they are dead.
All they're dead. You know, what a place to leave us.
In the next issue. It's a fantastic ending. Like it's a very well-structured issue. I mean, as I was reading it, I did kind of think like, okay, are we spending too much time on the Dreadnoughts? But by the end of the issue, I was like, no, we spent as much time as we needed to on this. We learned a lot about who this version of Cobra Commander is. We learned a lot about the Dreadnoughts. And the reveal at the end is really great. And not showing the violence, even though we've established that you're more than happy to show the violence in this series. I mean, it's a very brutal series. Yes, Santara, I do agree with this now. After this, you can never spend too much time on Dreadnoughts, for sure. By the end of the issue, I was definitely on board with that that statement. Very cool issue overall. Awesome.
Hey, Cody. Yeah, I love that. Like, we've had enough time. Like, this book is kind of, these three issues have been so fantastic because it's given us time to A, like the Dreadnoughts, or B, really dislike them. And either way, this payoff hurts. Like, because, I mean, maybe they're all going to die. I mean, we don't know. Like, is it...
You never know. Like,
you never know. Like, are these characters that we've, like, now detest, they die? So, yay for some people. And are these characters that we love died? No, for others. But we get this beautiful shot of Nemesis Enforcer. So good to see Nemesis Enforcer in a comic book. I'm sure Greg Crocott is very happy about this because he's a big Nemesis Enforcer fan. I mean, guys, how cool is this shot? Like, I want that as a poster, man.
It's absolutely just so gorgeous. Nemesis Enforcer is exploded out of his flesh suit and revealed himself in his glory. His wings outstretched and ready to just destroy.
And Rob, I love give this one a modest score though, because I'm not done with torture porn.
Modest 5 out of 5. I get it, Stephen.
I don't like seeing torture depicted in comic books. I mean, I understand this is a horror book, but like it's too much.
It's too much for you, despite the fact that it's in service of the character development and like story. Or do you think they spend too much time on it?
Yeah, we do spend a lot of time on the torture porn. It's excellent, but it's not to my liking necessarily. So I think fair 3.5 is fair for me.
I think that is fair. That is fair.
The reveal, I mean, you are proven correct, guys. I was wrong. I kind of had a very far out explanation that the Protector was in fact Zartan, and that he was initially a denizen of Cobra Command or Cobra Law.
I love that idea, man.
But no, they went route one on this one, and I don't blame them, because this is an excellent introduction of Nemesis Enforcer. It's just this unstoppable force, but not a mute. He's got a sharp mind. He's frustrated with Cobra Commander. We see a lot of insight into Nemesis Enforcer that we never got before. Nemesis Enforcer wasn't a character before. Nemesis Enforcer was just a force of nature.
Much better version. And this would be cool to get. I agree with Jeff Morris. I need a flesh suit Nemesis Enforcer. Which you could do, you know, with those old
figures. Put the lotion on, the hose again.
Do you remember the Terminator endoskeleton sort of factory where you'd use like flesh colored Play-Doh and it would kind of mold onto the endoskeleton?
The 90s Joe figures as well, you know, they created that armor.
Oh, the bio. Mega Marines armor.
But I think the Transformers one is a much better reference. Yeah, you can like tear it off and there's Nemesis and Force underneath.
Nothing, dude, nothing beats the X-Men, the movie toy line, Wave 1, with Mystique's Wolverine suit.
I've never held one of those before. I don't believe the time has
at my folks' place. No, it hasn't been.
Really?
I've never...
This is a rubber sort of Wolverine suit
that you pull
over the Mystique action figure. And has the rubber perished?
Yes,
of course.
Oh, it definitely would have.
And I'll throw that the mayor, because I also had not the mayor, I had Senator Kelly.
Yes.
As well. Mm. I can't remember who did he come with? But it's anyway, Jean Grey. He subsequently disintegrated and all the little pellets in him like came out. It was quite funny.
Was he filled with pellets?
Yes,
like one of those VAC warriors or Stretch Armstrong. No, not Stretch.
Yeah, exactly like Stretch Armstrong. Same kind of vibe. Or like, you know, those little baggies that are in your action figure boxes to keep it fresh.
Silica.
That's basically the stuff. Yeah, it's silica gel.
Yeah. So Paul, 3.5. What do you think, Paul? You're giving it 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, actually, no. I think it's a little bit. I think this is a big one for me. Okay, guys. I blame 3.5 for this. I think I enjoyed this book so much more because of how much I dislike 3.5. I'm gonna give this a five out of five. I think in a lot of ways it's like a really it's perfect for what it is. It answers a lot of questions. It asks more questions. It tells us stuff like Rob, you said it so nicely. It tells us a lot of stuff physically. Without sending us an email, without getting into tons of soliloquy, for example, you know, the violence serves the narrative, it serves the story. Yes, it is a bit harsh for some folk, and I totally get that. But for me, this is an amazing book. I really, really would love to get all of these in hardcover, or at least get the trade, I'd love to get these books for real, like physical,
puppies,
or at least get the trade, because I'm really loving this. It's been such a nice surprise. It's elevated Cobra Commander for me. Not that I dislike Cobra Commander, but those Devil's Due books have done... Devil's Due IDW has done a lot to mess up Cobra Commander in my brain. So these books are bringing him back for me, and I love that so much.
Yeah, he's a formidable force. I think it'll be very interesting to see him going forward in the Energon universe overall. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. I think it's a fantastic book, but I'm leaving space for stuff to get even better. But yes, it really is understandable.
Cliffhanger,
if it is if the horror is a little too much, it's understandable, you know.
And it's got one more issue, right? Oh, is it
They're doing 5-issue minis.
I'm curious to see how Cobra Commander's relationship with the Dreadnoughts is colored by these events. It's going to be interesting moving forward. Will Zartan sort of be the go-between? Or will Cobra Commander want to send them on all the dangerous assignments because, like, hopefully this time they'll die a grisly death? I'll never forget the day they took an acetylene torch to my pulse point.
It's a good story. And also, scary that he can take that much pain. Like, is that because of the genetic mutation?
This, This is a just different from Commander.
It's very different, but it definitely leans into that version of him from the movie where he, you know, where he is actually a snake person, you know. Obviously, this is an adapted because he was human, but he's obviously been improved by, you know, the globulus in them. So he is kind of like a hybrid now.
And yet, the movie version is still presenting animated Cobra Commander, which is the coward who always yells retreat. That was always like a strange, like, jump the shark to me. Like, if he's this tough guy from Cobra Law, how can he also be the military leader who's a coward? Like, the comic book version that this Cobra Commander series presents is finally a palpable, real threat.
Yeah,
in all facets, I think is really physically and mentally. Yeah, it's great, guys. Let's do a quick new shit section because I want to get this guy out of the way.
New shit.
I have finally completed my collection of the original 13. No, who is this?
Grunt.
I know, correct, Rob.
Yeah,
correct.
Grunt.
It had to be Grunt, I guess. Good old Grunt.
He had to be the last one. You struggled to get. What made him so tough to get?
Why was it the last one? Why was the last one, Steve? Like,
perhaps because he wasn't the toughest to get. Like, you want to knock out the Scarlets, the Stalkers, Zaps with actual thumbs that are still intact. But Grunt presented a problem. Like, he just never comes up for sale locally here in Australia. So I assume this was actually imported by someone else. This isn't bought. You know, someone didn't buy this carded in Australia in 1980, whatever. I don't think this wave necessarily came here. But I got this from another collector, and I do think this is an opportunity to talk about the dangers of very old O-ring figures and replacing their screws, replacing their O-rings, because he had a screw in his back that was too big. And it gapped his torso, so there's a gap at the shoulders, which indicates that the screw isn't going all the way in, isn't sort of coming to rest at its natural stopping point. So I took one of the screws from his thighs and put it in the back, and that's solved the problem perfectly. And I guess I want to say to everyone who is kind of conducting maintenance on their collections, as we all must, or if you're a seller and you want to get your collection, your stock in trade ready for sale, just be cognizant that the early guys use a very different screw. It's a much pointier screw, so try and size it correctly. If you need an example, yank one out of their thighs, take a look at that, and try and size a screw.
I never realized that the screws on the thighs were the same as the screws in the back.
They're not always, but more often than not, you know, if you're dealing with an old figure, they'll probably be the same screws throughout.
It makes sense, though. Unless using one type of screw for each thing that you are screwing together.
The O-rings, like 83, 84 guys need thinner O-rings. Hmm. Anything thick is going to put pressure on all of this old plastic, which is dangerous.
Well,
you will make your figure shatter into 1,000 pieces if you try and reassemble it with an O-ring that's too thick and too taut.
Hmm.
So, just knowledge is power, friends.
Wild. What else did you get, Steve? Anything?
That's it for me.
That is insane.
But a very important last purchase. How about you, Rob?
Congratulations, dude.
No, well,
like,
seriously, I mean,
congratulations. Like, wow.
That is
finishing the OG 13. Very cool.
It'll be cool to see them all together when you actually
able to. It only took me all my life.
Well, most of your life. Well, I haven't gotten anything new, but I did open another of the my collection. Oh, that's a good. That's some good advice from Occam's Razor. Put screws in white vinegar if they are rusty, and brush with a toothbrush makes them brand new. It's pretty smart. I never realized. I've never had to do that. But I opened another one of Tim Wilde's classified figures, and it is the original Zartan from the classified series. I will say that I still absolutely adore Pimp Daddy Destro more.
Zartan disguised as Destro.
Did I say Zartan?
You did.
Oh my goodness. I meant Destro.
the hour is late in South Africa. And Rob has been emptying out his storage unit. So
yes, I've spent a lot of time. Yeah, but he's very cool, actually, I think, overall. It's interesting, his little belt on his chest is a separate piece. I didn't realize that. And it attaches to the little gun holster thing on his hip. I was like, okay, that's a separate thing. Interesting. But very cool version of Destro of all. They nailed it like out of the gate, I think, with a very cool interpretation of Destro. Lights on accessories, like a little gun and a cool, what's this called? A briefcase. But very cool overall. I think it's they got him right, like straight away. Very, very cool. And that's all my new stuff. I only have old stuff now. I rediscovered and in getting rid of all my stuff, I rediscovered my old cars from my childhood. So I have a whole bunch of like little cars. So I chose my favorite one.
Cut a cheese.
Yeah. So one of my favorites is this weird purple guy. He's got
it's a Porsche. That's an awesome Hot Wheels. It's a 928. I love that.
He's
Porsche.
Very, very cool. So I have my Porsche back. I have this little really beat up blue car back. Which I'm very
Lamborghini,
happy
about. Like an old Countach.
Could be a Lamborghini. And then I have these two, which I think are essentially similar, but very cool cars.
Both Camaros.
Yeah. Although the one I had to fix, I think, was sticky.
Well, ones that, no, I lie. The other one looks like a Transam. anyway, whatever. They're very cool.
Very similar. They look very similar too. So those were the nice four cars that I decided to keep. And get rid of the rest, because all my stuff that I'm getting rid of will be given away to some sort of place that does stuff with the stuff, or just throwing it into a dump.
Donations. Oh, good for you.
Yeah,
Rob.
So there will be kids.
But I'm glad you kept some sentimental ones, because the power of nostalgia is strong in those old toy cars. Like each of us have our cars, like the ones that we always gravitated towards as children.
Yeah, for sure. Like, my son, I picked all of them up again, you know, and these are the ones that I always remember playing with. Like, that's why they're also like beaten up, you know, because they were the ones that I kind of like gravitated towards the most. So yeah, it's cool to kind of like feel them again, because it's wild. You have this kind of tactile memory. Like, I haven't touched these in probably 20 plus years, but like if they feel familiar. Which I think is crazy. Even the ones that I decided not to keep, as I'm picking them up, I'm like, yeah, I remember, you know, my hands know these vehicles, which I think is wild. It's very
Red off 468 says Firebirds. Were they Firebirds?
Ah, could have been Firebirds. Yeah. I mean, they have a cool like detail.
Thank you.
So they both have a little Firebird on the front.
Left is the Trans Am. The other one's a Firebird.
Thanks, Ridley01 as well. Okay. Jeez, guys, from a little snatch from a grubby camera feed, you were able to tell that.
Well, thanks, Stephen. Thanks for
calling. It's one thing to like
Rob's terrible quality and his awful light setup. You did it.
It's one thing to like see tons of pictures of those cars and miniatures and things like that. It's another to live in a country where you actually saw them, or maybe you owned one in your good days when you were younger. Because then
I own at least two of them.
Whether you graduated onto Lego or G.I. Joe or Transformers or Barbie or whatever, I think we all passed through that stage of like just cheapo, you know, supermarket binge buy metal cars, Hot Wheels, Matchbox, Majorette, if you will. Amazing.
It's a phase you all have to go through.
Hot Wheels and Matchbox for me. I had a lot of the color-changing Hot Wheels stuff. I loved that as a kid.
Color-changing.
And I loved the tanks. And then,
I had some of those. I did have the color-changing ones as well. Anything new from you?
No, dude. I've just actually been enjoying what I have got, which is really cool.
Never do that.
No, like, I'm... Never do that. Dude, I'm so happy, man. Like, I haven't got anything down the pipe at the moment. I'm all good. I'm enjoying my toys. It's cool.
Hell yeah.
Like, that's what I want. It's rad.
That's hilarious. We're all trying to figure out what this is. Sorry. We're trying to figure out what these cars are, but it actually...
The name should be underneath if it's a Hot Wheels or Matchbox.
Why that didn't occur to especially you, Paul, but like any one of us, like, of course.
I don't want to like...
Although I actually haven't said that. This one is an official Matchbox. So the one that's been fixed. But the other one is some sort of weird make called Yatming.
What?
Huh.
It's a Yatming.
Yatming?
Yatming?
Yeah, which does not have what the car is made. It's still a very cool made car. But yeah, it does not tell us. So actually, it was worth going through that.
For a knockoff, it looks bloody good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So it was worth it to go through.
Shout outs to the patrons. Thanks, guys. Much appreciated. See it in the goodness of their hearts to send us some bucks every month just to keep, I suppose, costs covered at Joburg HQ and maybe a little bit of extra cream for, I don't know, projects. What are we up to?
Actually, the reason I was all G.I. Joe video game tuned today was because I've been listening to it a lot, and I've had Ableton, which is my music making software, open. So I don't know what that says to people. I had such a I've had quite a few requests in the last, I would say, like 3 weeks about my music. And so I'd like to maybe buy one or two plugins. So in about a month or two, the Bergforce might support me getting some cool new synthy 80s cyberpunky plugins for making some extra tune.
Rewards of your
yes, so that'd be cool.
And thank you, YouTube members. I'm coming up on the 100th vlog very soon. There's a lot of that stuff.
Where did you go, Steve?
In this very fickle day and age, to keep up a weekly thing it's not easy, man. But it's coming up on 2 years worth of that stuff.
Wow.
So. Yeah, I
so as we exit the door, Dave has a question. Have we seen the Tonka Steel Monster vehicles? I have not, unfortunately. Apparently, they're 3¾-inch scale Mag Max type vehicles. Mad Max, I guess. And he's apparently making them all in Hot Wheel scale.
I'm very surprised at how little I've seen Steel Monsters, because I've had an awareness that they're Joe scaled. And like, to my mind, that means that they should be far more utilized and shown off, but they still feel relatively obscure.
Yeah,
I'd love to see more of them. I've certainly never seen any of them in the flesh. I don't know what that says, but that's amazing that you're making them in in Hot Wheels scale.
Hot Wheels scale, that is awesome. Cool.
It's like it's kind of a backwards way of thinking, because like we're always wanting to make customs. Yeah, we're always wanting customs that can fit our action figures, and you're going the other way. That's cool. Truck. I'd love to see that. Joe, if you don't mind sending us pictures of your work, we'll definitely show them off.
Do it
on the channel. Yeah.
In the burglary. Do it.
Check out our email address. The burglary. You guys. A real South African hero at gmail.com. But the link is in the description.
Do you want to like some love sexy shirts?
Oh, I do actually.
We sell sexy merchandise. Guys, if you're just looking for cool shirts, we got cool shirts, man. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like if you get some, it does support the channel, but ultimately actually get some because you like them.
You in getting cool That's, style.
It gets styled you, up. It's cool shirts and it's a good drop shipping company. It's our Teespring drop page. Trip. And Teespring does really great shirts. Like at least the ones that I've assigned for this stuff. So
I think we're out of here, boys and girls. Thank you to everyone who joined us in the live chats. And thank you to you folks in the future listening or watching and this podcast. We salute you. You are the reason we do this. Simple.
Hell yeah. And join us for episode 320. We will be discussing vehicle focus. So it's a pre-recorded episode.
Or
and
a figure.
Focus. Could be our first figure focus. Incredible.
Any toy that the three of us all own and have some history with. It's on the slab.
On the table. On
Maybe
the slab.
It'll be a Hot Wheels car.
We're ruining it. Could be.
Yo, Joe.
Do you guys own any of these?
Bird.